We are live for a new episode of Electric Podcast, and I'm your host, Fred Lambert, and I'm joined by Seth Wintrom. How are you this week, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
All right. We have plenty to talk about this week. A bunch of Tesla stock, of course, starting with the earnings and everything, but Seth is just coming back from a Porsche Taycan drive, so we're going to talk about that too. And we're going to talk so even about we had the mini drive that Jamie did last week for Electrek. We're going to discuss a little bit of that too. But let's start with Tesla in the earnings because it was arguably the biggest news of the week. Tesla beat expectations on both counts, on both revenue and on earnings per share non-GAAP. We're talking about almost $4 billion in revenue, and the 2.14 per share, again, non-GAAP for Q4. Wall Street was expecting just over $7 billion, so it's a decent beat on the revenue side. Was expecting 1.62 earnings per share. So again, decent beat on that front too. In terms of where that revenue is coming from, not surprising, it's still mainly the automotive business. I mean, Elon has been talking recently about, how did he say it? It's like the Tesla Energy is going to catch up to the automotive business at one point, but that point seems pretty far off because...
it's a moving target too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you have to look at the growth rate. You cannot just look at the total of each right now. I mean, but the good news is on the energy side, things are growing back for at least for the solar. I mean, the energy storage side has always been growing, and they just again achieve a new record of 530 megawatt hour of capacity deployed, which is starting to be like quite significant. And that quarter includes the first new mega packs that we reported on last year. Tesla is the latest energy products. Now they have the Powerwall, the Power Pack, and the Mega Pack. And the first ones were deployed last quarter. So that was part of that revenue. But yeah, I mean, we're still talking about $6.4 billion in revenue for the automotive business and $430 million for the energy business. So quite a way to catch up here. But solar deployment up 26% quarter over quarter, 43 megawatts to 54 megawatts. Tesla noted that was helped by the solar subscription, the new thing that no money down, you just subscribe to it and you can cancel anytime. And that apparently is working. And of course, an increased deployment of solar glass roof. But back to the automotive side of things. We're talking here in terms of gross margin, a little bit down quarter over quarter. We have to assume that that's due to the mix. No, actually, the mix of the price per car actually increased in Q4, which is surprising because with the higher volume, you'd think that Tesla would be affected negatively with more cheaper Model 3s. But with the increase of Model S and X sales from Q3 to Q4 by like, what, 2,000 units, that probably helped the mix a little bit. 19,000, excuse me, Model S and X delivered. What else is important for them in terms of the financials here? Um, 22.5% gross margins, like I said, a little bit lower than last quarter, but still second highest of the year,
and really high for an automotive company.
Yeah, that's fair too.
Other auto companies are in the single digits off.
And of course, the whole story is really Tesla controlling the costs more. I mean, that was something that they repeated several times during their earnings, where they are spending cash as fast as they can, so they are not cash constrained, but they are spending that cash efficiently. So, and we see that with Tesla delivering $105 million in GAAP income, $386 non-GAAP net income. That's very good. We're talking about basically a 4.9% operating margin. So that's after you calculate the operating expenses, really. So cash is king. Cash went up to 6.3 billion cash now, I think. Which, I mean, if you think about what Tesla was doing just a few years ago.
Yeah, they were scraping by.
Yeah.
And now they got some money to spend.
Yeah, I mean, even during the call, did you catch that during the call when the analyst was like, "Man, you have some cash now. You should buy some things. You should like," and Elon was like, "What do you want us to buy?" There's nothing interesting to us right now, even though they have 6.3. And if you remember when Zach Kirkhorn became CFO, and they were talking about his philosophy in terms of cash, and he was like, "Yeah, of course, cash is important, everything." And he felt like that at least $1 billion. It's where they feel comfortable to have at least $1 billion in cash. Now they have 6.3. So, and I mean, Elon talked about
they could buy Mazda at this point.
Yeah, they could.
Another assembly line, at least.
Yeah, naturally would want to.
No, probably not.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, everything was in terms of what came out of the actual earnings was interesting, but the biggest news was, of course, regarding the Model Y. With the release of the earnings, Tesla confirmed that they started Model Y production earlier this month. Didn't say exactly when, but they just started limited volume production and they started to ramp up. So they seem to be very much on schedule for that 1,000 a week by mid-year. But actual deliveries, apparently starting in March. So we've been talking about that with other automakers for a while now. Like the ID.3 is the best example. It's with the difference between the start of production and start of deliveries. I mean, they started production in November 2019. They don't plan on starting deliveries until summer 2020. So they see they are accumulating volumes during that time or whatever. So normally Tesla is not like that. Tesla, they start production and right away, like they deliver the first few cars, even if it's half a dozen cars, they do it. I mean, that's what they did for the Model 3 at least. Now they say they already started production, so they at least should have a few cars, and they are not going to start delivery for another month. Maybe even more than that. Like it could be the end of March.
Is that external customer deliveries? Maybe they got, you know, like Elon's got to get his car.
A few employees, you mean?
Jurvetson's got to get his car. Yeah. The employees got to get their cars.
Yeah, they weren't clear about that. You're right. Maybe they are not counting employee deliveries, and because I figure that even if Tesla is making like 10 cars a day, like that's a few hundred cars by the time. By the time mid-March arrives and everything. So, but yeah, it could make sense if it's going to employees. But they weren't clear about that. They were clear about it in the Model 3.
Yeah.
I mean, the first few deliveries were to employees. They made an event for it and everything.
I mean, that means like right now at this very second, there could be a couple production Model 3s, like, you know, off the line.
That's what it sounds like to me. They released the first picture image of it. Of course, I don't see anything vastly different from what we've been seeing as pre-production vehicle on the road as public testing. But Tesla did release an interesting side-by-side comparison with the original prototype release in March 2019. And from there, you can see some significant design improvements, some refinements and everything that look cool. They released some bodyline images too that you can see what Tesla was Elon has been talking about in terms of making bigger body panel, body frame structure. He was talking about 70 parts now being casted to one single part, which of course is going to be very interesting in terms of cost, because you don't need a bunch of robots to put those 70 parts together. Now it's just casted into one giant part.
So what are we looking at, you know, in terms of differences? Like, because, you know, they're kind of different angles, but, like, it's hard to see.
The front end, especially the front end, you can see the shape has changed quite a bit.
Okay. Oh, yeah, it kind of looks rounder. Mm. I didn't notice from the previous angle, but the sides look rounder. It's actually kind of a better, I think it looks a little better.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And the chrome delete now is basically confirmed. It's a production thing. There's no chrome on the Model Y. I mean, you wouldn't call it a chrome delete because there wasn't any chrome in the first place. But it's all it's known for in the industry is chrome delete, which has been somewhat popular with Model 3's owners. It's a popular aftermarket modification. But to have it standard like that, it's
interesting. Yeah, we gotta review a few Chrome Delete things.
Kit for the Mole 3?
Yeah.
I would like to do it on my car for sure.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing.
Mm-hmm. It looks good. Yeah.
And these wheels, those are the 19s on the production one?
Yeah. Speaking of, we can... didn't I put that in there? Oh, yeah. Model Y wheels. We can discuss that real quick. So with the announcement that Tesla started production, the announcement that deliveries are starting in March, Tesla updated the configurator with some changes, especially the wheels, which sounds stupid, but it's actually quite important because it clarified a lot of things. We reported when the carb filing came out like 2 weeks ago or something. We thought it was weird that the Model Y seems more efficient than at least just based on the powertrain itself and or on the dyno test, really. On the dyno test, so dyno test, of course, doesn't include wind resistance. So it doesn't say that it's more efficient, but at least the powertrain itself, more efficient or the friction with the wheels. And it seemed more efficient than the performance Model 3. Performance Model Y, more efficient performance Model 3. So why was that? Of course, it depends on what... Tesla, when it first tested with CARB the Performance Model 3, it did it with just the standard wheels that it came with, which at the time was 20-inch wheels, I think. And now they offer the Performance Model 3 with three different kinds of wheels. I mean, the 18, 19, 20-inch wheels. For the Model Y... We assume okay, then it has to use a smaller wheel to achieve that. And sure enough, now there's different wheels option for the Model Y. It's not just coming with the one that was standard Power Sport in the configurator before. Now they have the 20-inch induction wheel, and if you take the performance package on the performance Model Y, you get the 21-inch Uber turbine. So if you look at it, it's actually the new one that not the new one, the one that was in the on the original Model 3 vehicle unveiled, the prototype unveiled in 2016. They had that nice design that actually Elon said they was going to bring to production on the Model 3 at some point. They never did. Now they do on the Model Y, which is interesting. Big fan of it. Big fan of that wheel design. Things look pretty cool. A lot less of a fan of the 20-inch wheel design, which they call the induction wheel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you agree with me here, but I do love the black wheels on white cars. But
I actually like the black one.
Yeah?
I mean, I don't know. It kind of looks like a poor man's turbine, I think.
But, yeah.
But, you know, I definitely like black. So, you know, color is obviously important, mm-hmm. depending on what color of your car you have. But
at the center of it, I feel like it looks like something's missing on the center of it.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. And the confirmed that the standard wheel now is the Gemini wheels. 19-inch, so no standard 18-inch on the Model Y. It started at 19. And the Gemini will also, of course, they were unveiled a few months ago as a winter tire package for the Model 3. So they are available on Model 3, but as a winter package, winter tire package. So,
I mean, are Model 3 and Model Y wheels interchangeable? You can pop one off of one and onto the other? Or?
I would assume so. Now, can you take Model 3 18-inch wheels and put it on the Model Y? That'd be interesting. Maybe even more efficient, because that's the thing. Now, Tesla also announced an increase in range up to 315 miles of range for the Model Y, but that's highly dependent, of course, on the kind of wheel you're using. If you're using the Gemini, which they are not calling them aero wheels, but I think they have the most aerodynamic design, so they're not just smaller and more efficient in terms of the friction, rolling resistance, and things like that. It's also not a complete aero wheel, but pretty close to it. Like it's not completely covered, but let's say like what, 85% covered or something like that.
Yeah.
And this is the only configuration where you can get that 315 miles of range. Everything else is gonna, yeah, they say it's gonna go down to 280.
Yeah, I mean,
but then they say the same thing for the 20 and 21. So what's that about now? I'm sure the 21 is a little bit less efficient.
Yeah. Too. So I got a Model X with 22-inch turbines, and it gets horrible mileage. And it's also not a great ride. New York roads are garbage, so potholes are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they look dope, but they're not great at all. I mean, it's an SUV. Like, come on. Like, we're not going mm-hmm. out to the racetrack that often.
Yeah.
So
it does look good.
It does look good. Like, I don't know if they can get the rims to cover the wheels somehow, but without, you know, whatever makes the smaller wheels more efficient. That's the trick.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's something to consider when you're ordering your Model Y, because now the configurator is updated with those options. You have your reservation in still?
Mm-hmm. I was actually thinking about changing my address to California to see if I could get it earlier. But our Model X doesn't end till August. I don't know. Maybe I'll just sit tight.
And I think the different seat configuration too, like you're going to go with a six, you said, right?
No, well, you can't get a seven-seater until 2021.
Yeah.
So we're going to go five-seat. And I mean, right now we have a six-seat Model X. Mm. So we're only losing one seat, which isn't a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, frankly, you can throw one of the little kids in the back or something if it's an emergency, you know. Don't try this at home, but, you know, like if there's an emergency and you're at the movie theater, it's not going to end the world. So it's fine. And like what I've seen of the third row seat is it is small. Like, I don't think any adults could ever be back there anyway. So
yeah, it's hilarious. All the Tesla fan site are covering it. Oh, look at the giant back seat. I'm like, come on, let's be honest. Yeah. Love the Model Y. Great car. Fixes a lot about the Model 3, but the back seat is really like an add-on. Like, I would argue that the Model S
back seat,
yeah, Model S rear facing seat was like probably more convenient.
I think almost. So. I actually would prefer that.
Yeah, I mean, you were one of the few people without one. Yeah,
yeah, it was awesome. It like you just throw your kids back there; they destroy the back. But then the middle of the car where, like, you know, theoretically your friends or whatever jump in is still super clean. Mm-hmm. So, like, you, like, isolate the kids into the back. The only thing was that, you know, myself and my wife were both, like, always super afraid of something getting rear-ended with the kids in the car. Although Tesla said they had reinforced the rear bumper.
Yeah.
I didn't want to try that.
No.
You know, luckily we didn't get rear-ended, but it was always, like, kind of a concern. Now, on the other side, where most accidents occur, like 90% of accidents are hitting something. And rear-facing is actually better for that. So, you know, as long as you can avoid getting rear-ended, it's better to have rear-facing.
Which, that's seats. The problem. You cannot avoid, like, there's not much you can do about it. You can try to avoid, like, hitting something, but if you get hit in the back, it's not your fault. That's the problem.
Right.
It's someone else's fault. Less control over it. That can be nerve-wracking. But yeah, Model Y, you won't have that issue. But I mean, you're pretty much in the trunk. You're just not facing the rear with that third row seat. So it's also similar. But I'm sure that the Model Y is going to achieve some great safety ratings. Tesla's, that's always the priority for Tesla. So I would be surprised if it's anything different with the Model Y. Now, what else came out of that? There was some interesting comment about the production. So Tesla basically saying that they won't be production constrained in 2020 because they are, well, they were vague with their guidance in terms of deliveries. They're talking about over 500,000 cars. So that can mean a lot.
That's really vague, especially with them hitting that, you know, ish this last quarter. Like, they're over 100,000 right now per quarter, so they're already at 400,000.
But they did guide a slowdown in Q1, so they did say, like, deliveries are going to go down in Q1. But they didn't outright say it, but they were like, there's a seasonal slowdown in the market in Q1, like in the auto industry for every automaker. So they were alluding that don't expect 112,000 deliveries in Q1. But they broke down, so they said, okay, over 500,000 deliveries in 2020, and then they broke down their production. So they basically say that they are already able to produce 550,000 cars of Shanghai. So that's brand new production. Of course, I think it's still dependent on some production from elsewhere too, like in terms of some of the internal components. But let's say 150,000 cars, and they say that they aim to be still 90,000 for Model S and X combined, and they are combining model 3 model Y production of 400,000 units. So let's say 500,000 total for those two. That's 650,000 production capacity. So it's a big bump versus what they plan on selling. So for the first time, they wouldn't be production constrained, which I find interesting. Of course, people are like confused by the fact that they're saying 400,000 Model 3 Model Y. They're saying 70% of their parts. So of course, it makes sense to combine production capacity. Of course, it's not the same car. Like we just talked about, the body of the Model Y being vastly different in terms of the manufacturing, with 70% of the parts, 70 parts put into one, everything. But I think Tesla is anticipating Model Y affecting Model 3 sales to a degree. Definitely. Elon was being weird on the call by that. They were like, oh, we thought that this was going to happen when the Model X came to market, but it actually helped Model S sales, which, I mean, it is true what he said, but I'm not sure that the story is going to repeat itself with the Model 3 and Model Y for a bunch of different reasons. But also, like, I think at first, he's probably right. Like, I think Model 3 sales are going to be good at first because, again, the Model Y, they are doing that thing where they're coming back with, we sell the higher version first. So what's that going to create? Is that going to create some more marketing, more engagement, more eyes on Tesla for the Model Y program coming to market? But people are going to figure out, oh, I cannot get anything for less than, I think, is it $46,000, $47,000 now, the cheapest you can get? Something like that? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Ours has, yeah, you're right. Yeah, that sounds about right.
$46,000. So, of course, that's 6,000-7,000 more than the cheapest Model 3 available on the website. So that could help the sales of the cheaper Model 3s. The people will figure out, all right, I'm okay with a smaller trunk. I'm okay with not as high of a clearance as the Model Y. Whatever your main concern about the Model 3 for that price range. But when the Model Y, like, rear-wheel drive comes out, cheaper price, I think that's going to affect sell a lot more, and I think Tesla needs that car to achieve high volume with the Model Y. I think the all-wheel drive is going to sell well. It's not going to sell 300,000 units a year, though. I think the, like, if you look at what everyone is coming out with right now, the Niro EV, the Hyundai one was the Kona, all those crossover thing, like they're lower in price range, lower powered, of course, and everything. But that represents a big part of the market, especially in Europe too. So,
and China.
I think in China, you're right. So I think Tesla needs that.
Yeah, it's actually kind of amazing. They're the only ones doing really well with a sedan right now. Everybody else who sells sedans is having a hard time getting rid of their cars. Maybe that's not a coincidence. Maybe everybody who's buying a sedan is like, how about a Model 3? Mm-hmm. But like, I can't imagine Elon saying that they're not going to be demand constrained or supply constrained. It seems like, you know, maybe you should check his numbers, because like, if they make 500,000 Model Ys, I feel like there's a market for those.
Yeah, there is. But, oh yeah, that brings me to another interesting point, too. He didn't outright say that, but if I read between the lines, I'm almost understanding that Model Y is not going to launch in other market until it's built in other market. He didn't outright say that, but he was like, Model Y is going to be the first car we're going to produce every different market, because Shanghai, they're already working on production of the Model Y, so it's going to launch in China early next year. Which is about the timeline that Tesla launches cars. Like, it takes about a year for it to like get out of the U.S.
Yeah.
Not Canada. Canada is normally like faster, and of course, Model Y in Canada are going to come from Fremont, but with 2021, July 2021 for Berlin, that they are aiming for Gigafactory Berlin. And he said it's going to start with Model Y. So that's within the timeline. So my understanding is that they are looking to launch each one of these in their market and with cars built in their market, which would be a very interesting move from Tesla. Going to be much easier to control the costs make the logistics a lot easier. Gonna flatten out the dumb end too, I think. It's not, I think that's finally what's gonna help Tesla reduce their crazy hand of the quarters, which is putting a big strain on their employees. Because they're gonna have to move around fewer cars. They're gonna be able to focus more production in the US where they can deliver the car faster and not just come out at the end of a quarter with a giant shipment coming into a market and try to deliver those cars as soon as possible. So I think that's going to be very interesting. He doesn't say it outright, but the way he was talking about it, and then the timeline of production in each of those factories, I think it makes sense. In Canada, though, things are different. And I did make a post this week that I think it's interesting for Tesla, if Tesla is listening, or maybe they're already doing it, but we don't know. And for Canadian buyers, especially buyers in Quebec, which has the most generous EV incentive, $8,000 provincial incentive and the $5,000 federal, though the federal won't apply to Model Y at all due to the limitation. But the $8,000 will apply, but it will only apply until April based on the pricing right now that's on the website. They're going to lower the $75,000 limit to $65,000, which is going to, the Model Y is going to bust that limit. So technically, Tesla has until April to deliver cars. Now, they say that they're starting March deliveries in the US. So that would leave just a month to introduce the car in Canada, which would be very tight. Almost impossible. So I wrote that article just for the idea to be out there, but I wasn't saying that it was necessarily gonna happen. However, the next day I posted that a Model Y prototype was spotted in Toronto. Now that could mean different things. Tesla could be still just doing some winter cold weather tense testing in Toronto, or they could be looking to try to homologate the vehicle in Canada already, which normally takes a few months after the launch in the US. So we don't know. It's still speculation at this point, but it would be super cool.
Yeah, and it would be the end of winter, so it would be nice to have all-wheel drive up there.
Yeah, there'd still be some snow some places. And I think the Model Y is going to be a super popular car
everywhere
in Quebec, everywhere, especially in Quebec. But I think if they cannot get the $8,000, that would be a lot fewer people. Actually, they still get some money, $3,000 instead of $8,000, so the $5,000 difference.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. $5,000 it opens up the market a lot. So that you have a much different size of market between those $5,000 difference. And also, I think the all-wheel drive Model 3 is not going to be eligible anymore, or something. Or at least there's one version of Model 3 that's going to switch to. So Tesla, and that Tesla can deliver. So look that up if you are looking to buy a Model 3 in Quebec. You should definitely look that up because that could change depending on your configuration. All right, last thing on Tesla this week. Have you listened to that Trump tape that came out?
I tried. It was
rough.
It's rough.
So what happened is that wasn't necessarily related to Tesla or electric vehicle in general. The focus was over the whole impeachment thing with the whole collusion that was reported. Not the collusion, but whatever issue there is with the firing of the Ukrainian ambassador, yeah. And this what kind of influence Trump had over it. What's that? I mean, I know the actual issue, but what they are accusing him of, like putting pressure on the Ukraine to
investigate the Bidens.
Yeah, investigate the Bidens. So, what kind of crime is that again? Like, I'm not sure. The impeachment is on two specific crimes that they think
one committed was obstruction,
there? Obstruction to justice. Yeah,
and the other is I don't know. Misappropriation of funds or something.
Yeah, or influence or something. Anyway, so there was a tape that came out of a 57-minute dinner conversation, and why it came out, it was released by his Lev Parnas. I don't know, like, was Lev Parnas? Do we know?
Yeah, Lev Parnas. He's a Ukrainian American business person.
Okay. He released the tape, of course, to focus on the part of the conversation that was regarding the firing of the ambassador. But there was a part of the conversation that revolved around electric cars, Tesla, and alternative fuels, which was kind of interesting. It's only interesting to give you some context. It gave us some context of who's influencing Trump regarding those decisions. Because, of course, Trump right now is embroiling the whole EPA thing and reducing the emission standards that automakers have to comply to, which influence the number of electric cars they have to produce. So he has an influence on that front. And on the other front, he apparently contributed to shutting down the effort to reform the electric vehicle federal tax credit, according to some Democratic leaders. So why he did that? You could argue that he did that just because he doesn't believe. Well, recently he said some comment that he do believe in climate change now, I think, right? He changed his mind on that?
Yeah, I mean, he was at Davos and like they were asking him, is climate change a hoax? And he was like, no, I really care about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the way the wind blows.
Yeah. But so there's that, and there's also like Republicans don't like to give subsidies to green companies, though they love to give it to fossil fuels companies. But anyway, so that could be just hit. But this show that it's also the people around him that are giving information. As part of the conversation, Trump literally asked how electric cars are doing, and the response that he got from those business people and advisors were quite ridiculous. I mean, just you have to read Jamie's post where they did a great breakdown of all the stupid things they said. They misquoted the subsidies that their cars are getting. They did a bunch of comments about Tesla failing, running out of cash, the stock crashing, which it wasn't at the time, and it's obviously not now. And just nonsense, basically. And Trump is absorbing that.
I know. That's what the bad part of that is, like, oh, you're like, well, why is Trump such an idiot? And then this is why, because all the people around him are idiots. And, and I mean, like, I hate to say this, but to Trump's credit, he didn't really seem to be absorbing any of that. I mean, he wasn't absorbing anything, really. But
He was actively participating in the conversation. He was like, he's the one, like, because he asked how electric cars are doing within the context of one guy clearly lobbying for natural gas,
right?
SNG, like, he's apparently involved in the company that produced natural gas. It was like, and he was asking for things to help bring natural gas vehicle to market. And then Trump asked, like, well, the guy said that it would be better than other cars. It will help automakers achieve their emission standards. And then Trump was like, no, we were lowering that anyway, so they won't need to. And then the guy said, yeah, but SNG would still be nice and everything. And then we won't ask for too much, but we could beat electric cars. And like, then Trump is like, well, all electric cars are doing these days. And even specifically ask about Tesla stock price and everything.
Yeah. And I guess, sort of, to his credit, he also spoke highly of Elon Musk as, you know, we have to protect our inventors.
Mm-hmm.
So, theoretically, and he said something specifically about Tesla, like, oh, we all thought they were going to be gone, and now they're doing great. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
We all thought. Not all.
Not quite all of us. But all the Republicans did or something, I don't know.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought, again, like, it's people talking, but of course, people are influencing the president, which apparently had some influence on the lawmaking regarding electric cars lately. So I thought it was interesting to know about it. How about that Taken?
Oh, can we talk about the Taken?
Yeah, we are talking about the Taken.
All right.
Now.
So I've been kind of, you know, coming off of that ride. So a little background. So Porsche wouldn't really get, I mean, you went to the event in Niagara Falls.
Yeah, very last minute. I was trying to get an invite to that event for a long time.
And I was in Berlin. Berlin anyway. And I was like, hey, can I come to your event? And they're like, oh, it's all full. And
because there was three events for people who don't know. They did one in China, one in Berlin, one in Niagara Falls.
So I went, you know, I was like, that's weird. Like, why, like, we're the biggest electric vehicle site in the world. Like, why would you, I mean, I'm here. You don't have to pay for me to come out or anything. Which most car companies do that kind of stuff. And so they, you know, they're kind of blowing us off. And at the LA Motor Show, and we're not kind of supposed to talk about this, but I'll just say, like, I cornered the head of PR and I was like, hey, what's the deal? And he was like, you know, our lawyers are like, you guys are a Tesla evangelist site. And I was like, A, no, we're not. Look at the site. B, you know, we do plenty of negative Tesla stuff when they deserve it. B, you did invite Tesla Roddy, no offense to them, and Ben Sullins, who we are big friends with, whose site is called Teslanomics. So like they invited those two, and I think actually Ben was representing Tesla Roddy at that thing, or maybe something else. Anyway, I was like, you know, that's a good example of a Tesla, you know, focused site or a Tesla evangelist site. We, you know, like, of course we're pro Tesla. We're pro everybody who's green. Like, you know, that's not really the case. And he brought up the referrals thing that we've heard quite a bit. Anyway, I got this guy's name and I've been like, you know, just every week, just kind of like, hey, you know, we're around, like whatever. I guess I hit him at the right time this last week. And he was like, yeah, come on down. And it wasn't like he invited us to their drive. So they had a drive with like four other journalists that I had heard about. One of them told me about that they're going from Atlanta, driving down to Daytona, driving around the track a few times, doing all kinds of cool stuff for 3 days. No, we didn't get that. We got basically valeting the car back from Daytona to Atlanta, which
they had to do anyway.
Which they had to do anyway. I mean, like, they had to get the cars back. I mean, there was somebody in my car, so theoretically the guy who was in my car could have been driving the car, and maybe he's, you know, saving some time there, and he did some emails on the trip. But for me, it was awesome because I haven't really driven any Porsches, you know, much. I've had a few go-rounds. As I said in the article, my uncle used to have a 944, which most Porsche people are like, that's not really a Porsche. So the car is amazing. Like, you know, I've driven obviously very nice Teslas. I don't think it accelerates quite as fast as like a ludicrous Tesla, but it's pretty close. The tires are huge. It's a German car. Like it's like the doors shut and make that, you know, door shut sound. Like it's really like kind of a tight car. But it's kind of roomy as well. Like it's not like a 911 where you can't, you know, fit your golf clubs barely in the back. The PR guy I was with, like, laid down in the back. You could go car camping in it, theoretically. And
car camping in a $200,000 car.
You could. I mean, if, you know, if you wanted to do that kind of thing. Maybe you love your Porsche so much that you can't, you know, you'd rather sleep in it than a hotel. Who knows? Anyway, so driving it, didn't get a lot of track time or any track time. That happened the day before. I was basically in the, you know, took it from the hotel, got right onto the freeway, the interstate. They affectionately call that area of the freeway the Florida Autobahn because there's no cops and everybody drives like 90 miles per hour. So that was good. So I got to drive really fast in it. And then there were some wide open spaces where I'd go, you know, I'd put the pedal down and man, it goes from like 80 to, you know, 130-ish. You know, I don't remember what I was doing, but it goes so, and it's, you know, like a Tesla Model S will do the same thing. But, you know, the Porsche inside's a little bit tighter. The seats are way better. Like I have to say, they're more, I think they're aerated and like they have the sides. So when you go left and right, it's nice. The center sack sucks. We could barely get CarPlay working. It's small. You know, we got music.
They didn't have the extended screen on your version?
No, the extended screen was not even, I don't even think it was on there, let alone working.
It is an option.
Yeah, expensive one too. So I don't think they had that ready yet. And I I have a feeling that so they've already delivered 200 of these. I have a feeling that the first 200 people are probably getting pre-production displays and are going to have to go back to the dealership to upgrade that. But hardware, this was a hardware complete car. It was actually a little bit of a Frankenstein. It was a Taycan Turbo with Taycan Turbo S wheels, which are the big, super inefficient wheels. That
bring the one with the white interior too. Like the, it's pretty crazy, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
no, I mean the wheel, the interior of the wheel, not the interior of the car, like the
the hubcap, yeah, or whatever. I mean, it's not a hubcap, the wheel, no. But yeah, I mean. The car, you know, Porsche. So my takeaway is Porsche enthusiasts are going to really love this car, unless they like the loud noise and the stick shift. Which a
lot there is some noise, right? They do fake noise things, right?
They do a fake noise thing, and actually, if you go into ultra sport mode or whatever the highest mode is, even at like 90 miles per hour, it's putting out weird noise sounds, which are kind of cool. Like, you know, it's a different noise. It sounds a little bit like Knight Rider or something. So yeah, pretty sweet car. Like, you know, if I was a Porsche enthusiast, like it would be hard for me to pick another car. I mean, obviously the 911's got their fans.
Yeah, it's a different car though. It's a lighter vehicle.
Yeah, like way lighter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not. I mean, the real question is like, who's gonna take that car? Who's gonna take the Panamera over that car now? Like, I mean, it is cheaper for sure, but once the Turbo S, the 4S version comes out, starting at $104,000 before incentive, starting to make more sense now.
Yeah. I mean, the Panamera, I guess they got the a little bit more room inside, but it was a nice car. Like, even in the back seat, you sat in the back.
I was fine in the back, and I saw some pictures that you posted too. You look fine.
Yeah, it's not like super roomy, but for four people, four adults, I think it's fine. And man, you know, it's such a fun car to drive. It'll be interesting. So here's some scuttlebutt. I don't know if I mentioned this to anybody else, but Porsche told me while I was there that Motor Trend was coming the following week. And they were going to bring one of Elon's Plaid Model S's to put up against the Taycan. And they were like, we know it's going to lose. Like, Porsche was like, we know the Porsche is going to lose. But we're still going to do it. We like the publicity. And you can't really even buy a Plaid.
Yeah, and there's no losing to that. Because then they can quickly say, yeah, but ours is available for sale. And the Plaid is not available for sale. So we're more from Tesla on that front, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think Elon's got a special relationship with Motor Trend ever since the Car of the Year award with that
2013.
The Model S one. So I think he's kind of giving them the, you know, the exclusive first Plaid thing. So that, I mean, they're doing that this weekend, I believe. And so we'll probably hear about it. We'll probably see some teasers this week, and we'll probably see it in their, you know, video section in a week or so. Or maybe, you know what, we've been talking about how some YouTubers seem to be, have been in Fremont. I wonder if that's also a Plaid visit, you know, maybe.
Taking more Model Y previews and the other production version of it now, but maybe, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. So Taycan, I think it's a great car. It's not Tesla for a lot of reasons, but in a lot of ways it's better. So it, you know, it's what you're after. I would say though, given the choice of a Roadster or the Taycan, I'm going to still probably go with the Roadster.
Yeah.
Especially at that price.
But the Roadster is still more, so the top of the line is getting close to the Roadster. If the Roadster is really $200,000 on the non-founder series. So yeah, it's getting pretty close, fully equipped and everything.
Yep.
And it is 4-seat apparently, though I would assume that the 4-seat in the Roadster is worse than the 4-seat in the
Taycan. If there's not booster rockets in there or whatever.
Yeah. All right. The other test drive we had, the one happened last week, but we couldn't post until this week for some embargo reason. But Electric is Jamie. went to Miami, Florida. So you both were in Florida and a week apart to do the electric Mini Cooper SE test drive. I would recommend that you go on Electrek and read his review. He did a pretty good review of it and a pretty lengthy one too to get his opinion. But his takeaway at the end was it's not for everyone. It's a 110-mile car, so keep that in mind. But it's a great, fun city car, which the Mini Cooper is already known for, like as a fun city car. You can park it everywhere. It's easy to park. It's fun to drive, low to the ground, just a fun experience in terms of the driving feel. And for the price, it's interesting.
Yeah, as a city car. Really good.
So that's what you have to keep in mind. I mean, it starts basically at $30,000 before incentive. So depending on the market, you can bring it down, like in California, to just around $20,000 before you account for gas saving. Then you put the gas saving into it. It can be interesting. Now, is there competition that are all more interesting? Like we can get into that. But there's not like, personally, I would look something like a Hyundai Ioniq, the new one that came out. But even that, it's a little bit more expensive. You do get some more range, about 50 miles, 60 miles more range, all of it. But is it worth the $3,000 more that you're going to pay for it? Are you going to use that mileage a lot more? So I really don't think it's for everyone. But if you're someone that don't do any road trips or anything like that, you use your car in the city to commute and everything, then it could be an interesting buy. I mean,
yeah, I guess it's kind of like the last of the 100-mile EVs. Well, I mean, hopefully the last.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, how it's like in a weird position where BMW is just about to launch its fifth-generation electric powertrain that's going to enable a lot more like with the BMW iX3 that's coming out. And this is still using the BMW i3. So the fourth generation electric powertrain, and of course it's in a smaller form factor. So it's like coming out and being overshadowed by the fifth generation pretty quick, and also like most other automakers powertrain that, like you just said, they're not that many these days that are 100 miles, even the shorter ones that. A shorter range one like the Hyundai Ioniq, they just got a decent range upgrade with the 2020 version. So it's in a weird position, but I think they're going to sell a few with Mini Coopers fan. I know some fan that they just love the Mini Coopers and they want to go electric and they don't care about road trips that much. They don't do a lot of long distance and they can charge at home. I think that is going to be important too with that kind of range. You're going to want to charge every night with it. So it's going to be a very small market, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think Jamie highlighted kind of the big tragedy here is like we're a decade away from the Mini E that he used to own. He used to own an electric Mini E, and it had pretty much the same specs as this car. And basically, he called it BMW's lost decade. Like, what have they done in a decade? And frankly, it's like, I mean, I guess that's why they can their CEO, but like. For the company, you know, if we're assuming an all electric future, which I think almost everybody is at this point, BMW went from a leader to a laggard in a lost decade. And, you know, maybe they made short-term gains for their shareholders, but, you know, at what cost? They cost the future. So,
yeah,
bummer for BMW.
Or at least, like you said, 10 years, not necessarily the future. Anyone can still come back, I think. Like anyone maybe except from Toyota, and so they make like a 180 right now, but they can still come back, I think. Because they didn't exactly lost a decade, in my opinion. It's just that they sat on the BMW i3 because the original Mini E was a pilot program for the i3 that came out. So they did – something came out of the original Mini program. It's not just – it happened 10 years ago, and now this is coming to market. It became the BMW i3. Now, instead of like expanding the i3 into other vehicle segment, they just kept like changing the battery cells in it, which I don't think was a great way to go about it. Like they had to do more than that. they just sat on it, and that's where we are now today. But of course, like, they're changing that. It's not now the fifth generation is coming, the iX3 is coming, the iNEX is coming, the i4 is coming. So there's thing coming out. But yeah, they definitely lost a few years. Maybe not a decade, but a few years for sure. All right. How about GM? They had an event this week. We sent Electric's Brad Berman to Detroit to talk to them. And they came out with a few announcements. Most interestingly, they confirmed something that was been talked about for a while now, them reviving the Hummer brand as an electric vehicle brand, which we can talk about the irony of that. But what's exciting is that they are doing it on an exciting timeline here. They're talking about a release in the fall of 2021, so just over a year from now. So that's exciting. And they are launching a Super Bowl video with it.
A couple of them, yeah.
Four? Yeah, a couple, yeah.
Yeah, it should be good. I mean, so there's a couple things to unpack. You mentioned the Hummer thing. Hummers are kind of like the poster child for just gaudy,
gas-guzzling, big,
yeah, gas-guzzling cars.
Yeah.
And now they'll theoretically be the electric car. So, you know, somebody will say, hey, what kind of car do you drive? And you say, Hummer. And they'll either say, I love you or I hate you based on which Hummer it is. I mean, I guess they got the brand. They're trying to change perceptions of the brand. This is pretty much the only way they could do it. Otherwise, they might as well trash it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a bold approach.
Bold,
it's bold. But the way they're doing it is interesting, too, because if you think about it, they're doing it with a Super Bowl ad with a product that doesn't exist yet. No one can buy. But they're doing it with probably, I mean, a lot of people watch the Super Bowl, but you would think that a lot of people that would be into a Hummer would watch a Super Bowl to a degree. I know it's a broader market than that. A lot of people watch a Super Bowl, I'm aware, but like middle America, big trucks and things like that. It's definitely within the market that they are aiming to here. But again, they're not doing it with, they are spending millions of dollars on an ad or like a series of ad or ad campaign, whatever you want to call it. For a product that doesn't exist yet. So what they're doing is like they're not even showing the product. So they are trying to change the perception of the Hummer brand to that. And they're doing it with a specific market of people that watch the Super Bowl, which I find interesting to a degree. Whether it's going to work or not, I'm still not sure.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked briefly about how, like, is this all because of the Cybertruck or is this something that GM would have done anyway?
Yeah, I think they were working on that before the Cybertruck at least was on wheel. But
I mean,
I think the most interesting part of it is the timeline.
Yeah,
fall 2021 is faster than I was expected.
Yeah, I mean that's 18 months from now,
yeah.
And it's got some pretty impressive specs at least at the top end. 1,000 horsepower, that's huge. 3 seconds 0 to 60, that's crazy. That's going to beat their Corvette. And what was the other, like 11,000 pound foot of torque? Like,
no,
you know, that's crazy. So
here's the thing though. They need, if it looks anything like Hummers, we know how Hummers look, they need that, they need those specs.
Right.
Because it's not going to be very efficient of a car. And we were all complaining about the Taken, but the Taken has range and efficiency, but look at that thing. That's not going to be efficient at all. It's the boxiest thing ever.
Yeah, but you're going to have this huge vehicle going from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. I mean, that's gonna make some pavement. Like, that's going to be damage to the like highways. And they're going to have new tires that, like, you know, when we were in the Cybertruck accelerating, like, it like bounced up. Like, the front came up a little bit. It'll be interesting to see how
the Cybertruck has interesting tires, too. So I'm sure that Hummer is going to have a similar approach here. At the same event where we learned about the Hummer, GM also talked about their plans for the Detroit Amtrak plant. They confirmed that it's going to be an all-electric factory. So the first assembly factory from GM that's going to only produce all-electric vehicles starting next year with their pickup truck that's coming out.
Yep.
that they've been teasing. So that's also exciting on that front. I don't think they confirm any production volume, did they? I read that article 2 days ago, but I don't think... No, they didn't confirm any production volume. But that thing produced 4 million cars over the last 35 years, so...
Definitely some big capacity there.
Yeah, they have the potential for a big capacity at least.
Yep.
And last but not least, still talking about pickup trucks, Rivian this week confirmed that they plan to change the pricing of the Rivian R1T. Not a lot of details on that front, but they originally said that it was going to start at $69,000. That was for the 105 kilowatt hour version of the truck. They didn't confirm the pricing at the time of the two bigger 135, 180 kilowatt hour version of the pickup truck. Now, they did say that the price range is going to be lowered. They didn't say by how much. They didn't say if each package is going to be lowered, because by anyway, they cannot lower the price of the higher two. We didn't know them from the first place. So whatever they're going to say, it's going to be what it is. Of course, we speculated that might have to do with the Cybertruck, because the Cybertruck undercut the Rivian by a lot, starting at $40,000. And spec-wise, it was extremely competitive with everything Rivian was putting out, just with cheaper cost. So I would assume that it's linked to that. That they're going to release more pricing soon, which I think they have to at this point. I mean, I'm a reservation holder for over a year now, and I've never heard anything new about pricing other than this comment from RJ, the CEO. And they're supposed to start production in a few months, really by the end of the year. So yeah, it would be nice to be able to confirm an order with an actual price on each configuration and different options.
Yeah, next year is going to be, or the next 2 years are going to be pretty interesting for truck owners. So mm-hmm. A lot of cool stuff coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Should we go to the comments?
Yeah, let's answer a few questions, sure.
All right. Any insight as to when Tesla will be using their own electric mobile service vans instead of using pollution-emitting ICE vans? Can Cybertruck variant be used, or would a new vehicle be needed?
No, not the new vehicles. And to be fair, Tesla is already using some of their own Model X and S as a mobile service vehicle. We've reported on them. They've been modified inside. I still do think that they use more of those ICE van that RD is referencing. So that's fair on that front. A timeline on that, no, we have nothing. But I would assume that Tesla would start to produce more of their own vehicle on that front. And yeah, the Cybertruck could make a lot of sense at one point, but that's still years down. I mean, I don't think that they're going to focus any, they're going to reserve some production for that anytime soon. It's not a priority, let's say.
Yeah. All right. So back to Tesla stock, shock up market decline, close to 650. No wonder Elon is dancing and making music. 650 is quite a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good return for Tesla investors.
Yeah.
All right. So both you and I sold a little bit, but we're still in. So
yeah, I just sold a little bit prior to the earnings, but not much. So I'm still enjoying the ride after the earnings.
I sold a little bit more, but
yeah.
I've got a few left over. All right. Well, they dip a bit in this quarter, which is traditionally the weakest for car sales. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, Elon alluded to that for sure. Yeah.
Battery Investor Day on 4/20.
I don't care about that. Like, I don't know what this obsession with that, like, pot culture thing. I mean, I'm not against pot at all, but, like, who cares about the 4/20?
Right. Another Autonomy Day.
Maybe. He did say that. That's Joel is right. He did talk about making it like a yearly thing, which I think is a great idea, because you need to build confidence into autonomous system, and making presentation like he did the last time, I think, is a big step forward. So, yeah, definitely they should do another Autonomy Day and Battery Investor Day as soon as possible, because there's some very interesting news that's supposed to come out of that.
Yeah, and... Joel also mentioned that the last few years, the first quarter is usually the slowest, and which is normal in the auto industry. Mm-hmm. And theoretically, China could help if
Yeah, he's right about it.
Crazy virus going around.
Yeah, China could definitely help here.
And they blew up the Big Bear thesis that Tesla blows money and will go bankrupt. And I think there's also a short squeeze on. I think I saw a report. There's like another $1.5 billion in short losses just like the last week.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. All right. Paying off debt versus expansion. I think generally speaking, Tesla likes to expand.
Yeah, but he was pretty clear about that this time around. Like, I mean, three different people asked him about that, and he was very clear that he doesn't see them expanding more than they are now. Like, he feels like they are spending money as fast as they can right now, but doing it efficiently. So I think his answer makes sense. If he would see an opportunity to expand faster by spending more money, they would, but I don't think they see it right now. And I think it has a lot to do with the batteries again. If you go back to the batteries, whatever plan Tesla has in stock right now for the batteries, the way that's going to be rolled out, that's going to allow their future growth. They're battery constrained at the end of the day right now, which comes back to something we skipped. I think we should mention real quick. The 400 miles range Model S, Elon talked about that coming. He said that the Model S is about 380. I know they advertise it at 373 right now, the longest range version, but he said it's actually closer to 380. And he sees with the chemistry improvement, 400 miles coming soon, which is fun. It's like, I think it's a good like mental barrier thing where, oh, we have a 400 mile electric car. I think it's good on that front. But when I said in the post that I don't think that's the that's the best way to approach it, I got a lot of pushback from the electric readers. Were saying, "Nah, what are you talking about? People, they want a longer range. We should deliver longer range." And I agree. If you can do it efficiently, that's great. I'm not against longer range, but I'm against putting a lot more batteries inside electric car. That's what I'm against, because you don't really need it. I think convenient and fast charging is the priority to allow a great ownership experience, as long as you do have a 200 miles range. But because a 200-300 miles range, if you have fast and convenient charging everywhere, there's no limitation. You can go everywhere. You can go long road trips and you can do anything like that.
Exactly.
But the thing that's slowing down electric vehicle growth right now is access to batteries. And if you put more batteries in a car that are not being used 99% of the time, you're not efficiently growing the electric vehicle fleet, which is what we need right now as fast as possible. Right. So I'm saying, yeah, if we can just make your EVs more efficient and get longer range with the same amount of batteries, I'm like, I'm all for it. It's good for the perception of electric vehicle. But the people that are not buying electric cars right now because they are not 400 miles of range, the problem is not that we don't have an electric car that's 400 miles of range. The problem is their perception. So we should work on changing the perception that they need 400 miles of range.
So I 100% agree with you. I spew the same like thing, and I think everybody at Electric's on the same boat with that. In addition, like another bad part of that is like a 400-mile Tesla is going to weigh a lot. Like that's a huge, heavy battery that you're not going to use most days. Like you know, maybe you need that 400 miles once or twice a year, and the rest of the year you're schlepping around like a 1,000 pounds. It's basically like having your whole family in your car all the time, like weight-wise. Mm-hmm. Like you have another 1,000 pounds of weight in your car that you don't use except for maybe once or twice a year. And, you know, maybe it takes a little bit longer at the superchargers, but in the grand scheme of things, it's really not that big a deal. And who's driving 400 miles? That's like 6 hours of highway or 7 hours of highway time. Like, who's doing that? Like, they have to have depends on, you know, like,
then you have your people that comes out that like, I live in Arkansas and like, there's not that many charger and everything. I agree for you right now, a 400 miles car will makes a lot more sense, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that the priority should be fast and convenient charging. So instead go to Arkansas and like, we figure out the architecture, our charging architecture so that a 200-300 miles range car would make sense there. I think that's the way to go. But I do understand there's some situation where you need a longer range for sure.
Yeah, so let's kind of cycle through the rest of these. HEPA filter in the Model 3 China for the coronavirus. I don't know if that's going to help. maybe a little bit. just put a HEPA filter on your face, probably be better.
Yeah, yeah.
Chrome costs money, so the Chrome delete. So save a little few bucks there, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's see. Big Brother's watching. Great podcast. Thank you, Green Gold. Shanghai not producing because of the coronavirus.
They said a week and a half shutdown that they have to do. I'm not sure why exactly. I know that they have a lot of problem with public transportation being a factor in spreading. So maybe like they cannot bring employees to the factories or whatnot. Not sure.
Local versus Fremont production for other markets on Third Row.
Yeah, he talked about that too.
And then Fremont to other markets. This was kind of on our not shipping overseas. So we're going to be at the Fully Charged live event in Austin. I'll be there, and we'll have some of the 9to5 Mac folks there. And then I don't know if anybody else is going to be at Bloomberg New Energy Finance in San Francisco next week. And that's Monday and Tuesday. We'll be there. So hopefully we'll see some people there.
Yeah, I'm not at the Fully Charged thing, but I'll be at the Bloomberg Future Mobility Summit Monday and Tuesday.
Wow, we are clueless on U.S. politics. My God, what did I just hear? That's fair. I don't, like, frankly...
What did we discuss U.S. politics for? We just discussed...
Trump. It's probably a Trump guy.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't discuss the politics of it. We just discussed, like, I mean, listen to that conversation and tell me that it's not complete nonsense what they're talking about. That's all we said.
Yeah, and then the Trump conversations, it illustrates why it was a good idea for Elon to be an advisor to Trump to offset the misinformation he's getting from polluting industries. I think Elon kind of gave up on that pretty quickly, though.
Bouncing off the wall. You said maybe not worth the time, but I get where he's coming from with that for sure.
The cost of the Taycan I rode in was $200,000. It was the turbo... with the turbo S wheels, yeah. So you know, somewhere between like 180 and 200, it's a very expensive car. Actually, one we almost ran over a 4x4 that was on the road, and we were in like the low mode, but not the really low mode. And the guy was like, "If we were in the really low mode, we would have hit that thing." And we were going like 100 miles per hour, so that would have been crazy. If the roadster ever comes, yes, we're kind of worried about the roadster ever coming, but it'll come. The Model S has 2 times the range of the Taycan, at least that's what Musk said in the conference call.
No. He said it's coming. The 400 miles is coming, so it doesn't have to. Right now, officially, 373, and he says it's just because they haven't updated the EPA. The cars that are coming off the line should get closer to 280, which is probably fair, but not 400 miles yet. That's coming, he said.
Yeah, and the lower speed Taycans with the like smaller wheels get 220 or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair, too. They do get more than 200. Sean Mitchell. You mean Mitchell? I think Sean did something for Tesla at Porsche.
You cannot have my job. No.
No.
I'm not leaving. I don't.
Yeah. Why people are saying that you're leaving? Two people different saying that. I think you misunderstood something. You're leaving for Austin tomorrow, but you're not, it's for electric.
I'm leaving on an airplane in like 12 hours. Lock in a Cybertruck with a 7K full self-driving. Okay.
Yeah.
Pocket the difference. That's a DaVinci. Impeachment description was total cringe. All right. Well, I guess that's not our thing. We'll see you on the impeachment podcast next week.
Yeah, no, I was just asking what was the actual crime he was listed for. I just didn't remember that, but I know it's for influencing foreign politics in order to gain some political advantage in the U.S. That I understand, but I just didn't remember how they would classify that crime or whatever he was doing. So,
which crime? You have to be more specific. Anyway.
Crime they're accusing him of.
Right.
Allegedly. All right? Allegedly. Are you using the right words now? Also, I'm Canadian. I don't have a I don't have too much skin in the game.
All right.
Yeah, that's it for the electric episode this week. And, Christopher just chimed in. It's a crime to ask a foreign government to assist with your election. Yeah, that's what I was alluding to, but I think there was a specific term that I'm just missing right now. But anyway, Thanks a lot for listening this week. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube. You can subscribe. You can like the video. That's always helpful for us. On your podcast app, you can give us a thumbs up. A review. That always helps. And we're going to see you same place, same time next week, coming out of the summit in San Francisco and the Fully Charged. So if we have any interesting things to talk about from that, we're going to do it. And that's it. Thanks a lot.